thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 34 of Ireland's Best Business Podcast, brought to you, as always, by the world's best shaving oil company, DeFactoShave.com. I'm Conal O'Moran, and for those of you who follow us on social media, you will have seen that we were meant to have Samantha King with us today, but unfortunately she was suddenly indisposed, but we do look forward to having Samantha with us very, very shortly. That means that we have two great backstories, two great business stories for you this week, starting at the ground floor, how one man went from delivery driver to running Ireland's largest parcel delivery company. And if you'd like to own a cut of your own distillery, we'll tell you how you may be able to do just that for just £20 sterling. As we like saying, we do business differently. Our website is thatgreatbusinessshow.com, but the best place to talk to us, we're finding, is on LinkedIn. So please follow our page there and we'll give you more tips, insights, and of course our weekly sneak peek of what's coming up on the podcast. I was in touch with Audrey Owens at Arnott's, who joined us on episode 32 to talk about their great Pitch 21 promotion. She tells me that they have been, quote, overwhelmed with the response, far exceeding their expectations. So if you have applied for the competition, it's going to be tough. We will know the shortlist, I understand, from Audrey about the 5th of July or thereabouts. So they have to go through each and every one of those applications. I was also chatting with Tom Murphy, founder of our sponsor, DeFacto Shaving Oil, and he's still on the hunt for great distributors for his product anywhere and everywhere around the world. If you know any high-energy salespeople working in the personal care or grooming industry, tell them to give Tom a shout. He is on tom@pamex.ie. I think it's fair to say, barring any major disaster, that we're slowly seeing the back of COVID and businesses, thank God, are getting back to what they do best, doing business. There will be many, many, many war stories written about how people coped with their businesses being locked up, locked down or whatever, and how they survived. One such story is that of parcel delivery service DPD. DPD's chief executive, Des Travers, was planning on a severe downturn in the business when COVID hit. But he had to do the fastest of handbrake turns when business literally went through the roof as the world went online. DPD delivered in Ireland 35 million parcels last year, up from 22 million in 2019. Des Travers, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, and nice to be here.
Were you, you thought it was all going to end in tears?
Look, if we'd known what was coming, we'd have taken the 2 weeks and gone and sat on the beach somewhere before we knew that we were going to not be able to even sit on the beach. But yeah, we spent 2 weeks basically working a crash plan for our owners in France and expecting the worst. So,
and then, did the penny drop? Yeah.
Well, it was a phenomenal challenge. So what happened then was that, as I say, when the business closed and everybody went online, and effectively then the boom just started, and every day.
And how quickly could you see that?
Well, we didn't. I'd love to say we were visionaries and we could see it. We didn't see it. We were planning for a downturn. So, but what happened with all the parcel carriers was very quickly you start to see your volumes go up, your customers effectively reacted to the situation they had, and they wanted us to react to them, and we became their final mile and their only mile, as it turned out, delivery service. So as it turned out, then that was the start of a journey. And we had we traditionally would see a peak in Black Cyber Weekend, you know, Black Friday through, and that last 6 weeks of the year would be absolute mayhem for us. And to be honest with you, in our industry, if you deal with that very well, then you have a good year the following year. But this was something of a different scale, and it started in the summer and it carried on for the whole, and it's carried on till today.
And growing. Is it still growing?
Yeah, it's still growing at the moment, yeah. And probably this week now it started to take a slight dip, I would say, in terms of there, but it's been growing every week since.
Now, it's all very well to say that it's grown, but then you had to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to. Well, we hired 800 drivers, an example. Wow. So that was an interesting challenge.
How do you hire 800 drivers?
Yeah, well, you just do. You need 800 drivers. You hire 800
Your
drivers.
Your backstory is really interesting because, yes, you were a welder. We won't go there.
Yeah.
But you literally started on the ground floor in delivery.
Yeah, I started in Ireland when I first came to Ireland. One of my first jobs was a driver for DHL. I was the 10th employee of DHL in Ireland, and they started that business out of a basement apartment in the North Circular Road, and now it's grown to, I mean, it's just enormous. And I was part of that. And then, as I say, I just moved on. I've never done anything else other than parcels since that day, to be honest.
The idea that you did start literally on the ground floor, because anybody who thinks that they can take advantage of you, you just say, no, I've been there. Yeah. I know what you're up to.
Well, I think because I did start that way, I still have a great... I know what it takes to be a driver, and to be honest with you, I couldn't do it today. There's not a hope now with the amount of deliveries and the amount of work and effort and energy and the 1 hour window and everything else. It's just, it is, you know, for people that think that it just happens and you walk up the path, well, far from it. And then it takes a special type of person to be a driver nowadays and to put up with all the stuff that they have to put up with every day. But we have 2,000 of them.
Are they abused?
No, that would be wrong to say it's abused. But for instance, if you're in a one-hour window predict, which we have, which is one of our big selling points, right, you're like having a clock on your back all the time. You've got to keep going. You've got to deliver every 5 minutes, and you've got to get through every parcel and get every delivery done successfully. And at the same time, you've got to smile on the doorstep.
Yeah.
And
chatting, though.
Well, there's a little bit of chatting goes on as well. It's amazing how quick a delivery can be done, believe it or not. We've been measuring something. In some cases, we do in delivery in 11 seconds. So 11 seconds from getting out the van to back into the van again. So,
whoa.
So it's so there's a little bit of time for chatting every now and again. But some other times, it can take you 3 or 4 minutes. It took me one 3 or 4 minutes to find you today. So if I'd have asked for you, I'd have been out of my predicament.
And that's
window.
Despite my precise instructions. Go back to the 800 drivers that you hire. You don't just put up a sign in the window saying wanted 800 drivers.
Well, it's interesting. And I mean, we've been hiring drivers. We've grown our business every year since we started, actually, since again. And certainly in the last 3 years, we've had tremendous growth despite outside of COVID. But so you have a skill set, you have an ability to be able to see the type of people you want and what you want, and then basically then you just scale up. You just go to a different level, 35 sites, all hiring drivers. I think the thing is hiring 800 drivers is one thing, training 800 drivers is another thing altogether.
And how long does training take?
About 5 days, thereabouts, all told.
5 times 800?
Yeah.
That's a lot of days.
It's a lot of days, and it takes a lot to keep...
And is there nutrition as well? Do you lose drivers?
Yeah, you do. Every business lose staff, don't they? So it's not for everybody.
Come on, tell us the truth. Who nicks them on you? Does DHL
they don't. Every driver will tell you what the other driver's getting paid, what the other driver's doing and all that, but they seem to stay with you. So you must be doing too many things wrong, nevertheless.
So you also have to presumably get the vans.
Yeah, the vans are again, it's interesting this year now because we're going to a lot of electric vans. Actually, just left. I saw the new Nissan van that we just took on today, only literally in the last hour. I just saw one of the drivers driving around in it, and it's a beautiful van. But the vans aren't a real problem this year. That has been because there's been a bit of a lull now in sales and all that sort of stuff. So there's not that many vans available. And certainly this peak, for instance, example, we will need to hire probably 250 or 300 vans. So we'll have a bit of a job getting them, I think.
But. And presumably, if you're hiring and buying and renting, everybody else, competitors. So it's doggy dog out there.
Yeah, well, it's not. As I say, I always think, because, I respect my competitors and everyone else out there, and I don't really ever think of it. Yeah, I still want to win. I don't want to kill it nice to kill them. But look, it's there's some interesting challenges for a business. Growing a business at the pace we did, been able to put the footprint on the depots. You know, I just left Kildare Depot today, 75,000 square foot warehouse that we're just building. And we're going to need that for this peak. All the time, you're constantly trying to, 2 weeks ago, I signed on a new Carlo depot. So there's constant growth. And we've done basically 4 years growth in 1 year this year.
Wow. And the bosses, curiously, are in France.
Yes, our own by La Poste, the French post office, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were to say, before I had started chatting with you, if you had said DPD to me, I would have thought they're probably Irish. No.
Well, it's a... If I can take you back about 20 years to explain that story. When we were all in the integrators and the DHLs, the FedEx, the UPSs, all of us, we all thought that we were the big boys in the world. And the post offices were not even a thought in our sides, right? We were out trying to rule the world and there. And one by one, the post offices bought us. So DHL's owned by the German post office. And we're owned by the French post office. And one by one, the post office bought all the integrators and then used their services then to deliver their own domestic services. So we were a little bit sidewinked, right, by our fact that we thought we were the big boys, when in reality, we were...
Mind you, most of them had state money behind them and they could afford to spend anything.
Did. Yeah.
DPD is the largest parcel delivery company in this country at this moment.
Yeah, well, the largest private. I mean, I'm possible to argue that, David, with the post, if, you know, it depends what you mean by a parcel carrier. If you take all the postmen, right, then undoubtedly I'm post of the most amount of people and vehicles on the road because they're delivering the post as well. But if you just took parcels on its own, then we would be the largest parcel delivery company in Ireland.
And when you started with DPD, how big was it?
Yeah, it was still a sizable business. It was certainly in the top two.
But in terms of physical size, well, it was staff?
In terms of staff, we were probably, I can't remember, about 700 at the time.
And
we're
what
about
are you now?
2,200 now.
That is testimony to you. You have managed that.
Well, it's a real testimony to all of us. You know, I always like to say this, right, that you can take the praise because you're at the top of the tree, right? But the rest of the tree has to work before the top of the tree works. So we've got a great team. And, we've delivering double-digit growth before COVID, and it was all moving very nicely. Our French owners liked us, loved us, in fact, right, what we were delivering back to them again, and now COVID just took it to a different level. So,
and I presume that was similar right across Europe.
Similar across Europe. Some carriers that weren't ready for B2C, I'll give you one as an example, TNT were a B2B carrier, so they were delivering business-to-business. And they didn't see the upsurge because they had to move very quickly towards doing B2C deliveries, which didn't suit them because they had the 7.5-ton trucks and tail lifts and all that sort of stuff. So, but if you were in the, and most of us are in the actual final mile delivery to houses, then you definitely saw a lift.
Now, what is the future? Because I look at drones, for example. Manna.
Yeah.
Is one of the drone companies that is getting very, very close to a real service.
Yeah, we've been looking at drones for about 2 years now. And that is interesting because they'll trial it on an island or they'll trial it somewhere with not a dense population and some things. And there's some challenges for drones. Same as for the rest of us with electric and everything else. You can't put an electric vehicle in West Cork as an example, right? You'll be towing it back again. So, and likewise with drones have their own challenges. They can only carry one parcel in the main. So it's a single mile delivery.
I've been looking at some of the ones now that they're trialing.
Yeah.
Is that they're going to go four parcels and quite heavy as well.
Yeah. Well, look, I dare say the technology will move on and they'll get to that too. And we were talking to an Irish company here that was doing drones and I like them because it was a really interesting entrepreneurial business that he was going to start. But the fact of the matter, he was looking at the time at food deliveries instead of Deliveroo or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and that was his marketplace. So.
So what is the future that, as you see it? Now, you very honestly said you had no idea what was going to happen during COVID.
COVID, yeah.
So is there any point even asking you to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing?
Well, I don't think there's any... I don't think any sane person would think that we're going to go back to what normality was previously. So there's going to be a mixture between shopping and online shopping. And one of the things is that people have now picked up habits. People are shopping online that never shopped online before, and they now understand it, and they now see how the parcel can arrive at the door, and they don't have to go. And we're delivering things that we never, ever deliver in our life before. I'll give you a perfect example, dog food is an example. So rather than going and get you down to your pet shop and get yourself two bags of 10 kilo dog food and put it in the back of your car and then hump it back in again, the DPD guy arrives at the door with it. Right, and you only have to order it yesterday to get it. So there are certain things I think that will by convenience and by like and by desire, will continue to come in online, and there'll be certain things that people will want to go and try on and see how it fits and see how it feels in the shop, and there's a place for both.
And what are the unusual items that you've been asked to carry?
Well, anything that's in your house, we've carried effectively now. So
but I have unusual things in my house.
Well, I don't know you that well, but if you have, you have. We do Victoria's Secret as an example, so maybe we'll look you up to see your address without being too evasive. But look, there's...
do you not carry?
I'll give you an example. We've only recently started carrying IKEA goods, the smaller stuff, light shades, lamps, all those sort of things. And that would have been something that we would have carried previously. We don't do white goods, washing machines, that type of thing, or anything that's two man. So we don't do two man, but certainly you'd be very surprised at the things that we do. We don't do live animals, and we don't do any guns or any of those sort of things.
So but how do you know I'm not shipping a gun?
Well, we don't want to ship a gun, right? But I can tell you I have now, because of Brexit, I now have 30 customs officers in my facility in Athlone doing the customs clearance with us. And I can tell you that the amount of contraband that they've found right throughout
Get
that
away.
Time right, has been quite interesting. So yeah.
So you didn't know what you were carrying?
No, we didn't. Certainly, since some of the parcels, what we've been told is in the parcel and what's in the parcel are two different things.
And how are they finding that? Are they scanning?
They have dog sniffers. They have everything all set to
find. Keep talking to me about Brexit. Was that an absolute pain for you?
Yeah, complete horror show, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And what's the upshot?
The reality of it was, right, everybody said they were ready, but nobody really was ready. Right?
Because we didn't know what to be ready for.
Yeah, correct. So but it wasn't there. And then when it happened then and it came through, then it was really a difficult time, because something that in October or November, they effectively just got delivered to your door and you didn't have to think about, right? Next thing now you're talking about duties and taxes, you're talking about having to have an EORI number, you're talking about all sorts of stuff that you never even dreamt. Right, all you wanted was a jumper. Right, you didn't want all this stuff with it.
I like your way of thinking.
So that became a complication. But now, as time has moved on and our systems have got better and customs have got better and the revenue's got better and we've all understood it now, at least 85% of all our goods now move through the way they used to before. But people are now paying duties and taxes before the parcel arrives.
Because I was going to ask you, you're not taking cash at the door?
No, some of our competitors are, but we are not.
I thought that was pretty weird, because you're handling cash and all of the problems with that.
Yeah. We never set our systems up to do that. But we know our competitors are, well, not all our competitors, but some of our competitors are doing that. And I certainly wouldn't want my drivers to be carrying cash in the vans all day long and all that sort of stuff. So.
And asking for it and it holds up.
That's right.
Actually, somebody did come to the door for me the other day and needed cash, and nobody in the house had cash.
Mm, yeah.
Four adults, no cash.
No cash, yeah.
So back to Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing? Is there a big turn away from the UK?
It's been interesting in the actual trend that we've seen so far. So first of all, we had an awful lot of traffic that used to come in from Europe into the UK and then into Ireland. And now that's coming direct into Ireland from the continent. So
through Rosslare, is it?
Well, either through Rosslare or coming in now through the Landbridge. So the land bridge didn't work at the beginning, which is another problem for Brexit, but it's now working reasonably well now. So we actually have as many trailers now coming from mainland Europe as we have from the UK, which if you'd asked me that question pre-Brexit, right, I would have thought you were nuts, because I thought it was a minute part of our business, but now it's a sizable chunk of our business.
And that begs the question as to, does that mean that UK distributors have just lost out?
In some cases, yeah. Yeah, some cases have just gone, like, if you take Nike as an example, comes out of Belgium, right, comes direct into Ireland, and that would have come out of Hemel Hempstead prior to that. So that traffic's just been moved. And again, Nike have done that for convenience. They don't have to ask for duties and taxes. They don't have to ask the consumer for any of the details. So the obvious thing was to move it from mainland into Ireland direct.
That would suggest that Nike should be discounting if they don't have to pay a distributor in the UK. But that's another day's chat, I think.
You should take some of the parents and ask them how much they pay for a pair of Nike runners. I don't think the delivery rate is the biggest concern there.
Fair point. Back to the future of distribution. Consolidation, do you see that happening?
Not really in Ireland, really.
But there's a dozen companies out there. Maybe there's two dozen companies out there.
There is, but there's not that many actually doing it at scale and size in terms of, and the smaller ones are actually using some of the bigger ones. They're collecting under their own brand, but they're actually handing it into the bigger ones to actually do the final mile or the distribution for them. So there's probably four companies in Ireland that are really size and scale that make it that they can do nationwide delivery next day. And anybody can take a man in a van. It's actually interesting because 15 years ago or so, or 10 years ago, a man in a van was very, very common. And a guy could get started in a business by just a man in a van and going doing deliveries here and deliveries there. And they might get, we'll just say in today's money, 15 euros a delivery, that type of money in there. Well, they can't get that now. They can't get 5 euros for a delivery now, so it doesn't make it viable for them. So they've got to collect 30 or 40 jobs to be able to make any money in a day and then run around an awful lot of mileage, and that's where it all goes wrong. So those guys have actually now come work for us as owner drivers and take a full day's work and a full day's pay in a small area, right, rather than actually try and get going themselves and do the commercials themselves.
And what's the basis of their employment? Are they contracted to you or?
Yeah, they're a self-employed driver, yeah. Yeah, they come to us as a contracted rate and they come as self-employed.
And do you give them guaranteed work or
we guaranteed? Don't guaranteed work, but they won't stay with us if they don't get a decent week's pay, so.
Well, no, I mean that, do you say, well, we'll have 5 days work or 3 days work?
In the main we can do. And look, the guys build relationships with the depot managers and the owners, and they basically then they all figure out how to come to a good commercial agreement for both of them. And more the owner-driver model has been seen to the way that everybody's going now. So the trend in the industry is to go more to more and more owner-drivers.
One other trend, and I wonder, does this affect you, is the trend towards cutting off traffic in the city centres.
Yes.
Is that an area of interest?
Yeah. The whole green environment agenda is certainly going to change the distribution channels and how we get in now. There's an awful lot of different things that have been piloted and tried to enable us to try and get a final mile delivery that's carbon neutral. We are carbon neutral and have been for 10 years, but we've resealed our carbon. So we've built forests in Africa and places like that, right, to be able to make ourselves feel good about it. Now, and the same with all our competitors, what we're doing is actually trying to do the final mile as carbon neutral as possible. So as I said to you earlier on, you know, we're investing in electric vehicles and we're investing in energy systems and all sorts of stuff around to try and make ourselves as carbon neutral as possible.
In 3 to 5 years, will I see a little buggy going up and down the road, an electric buggy?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It'll be a DVD one, yeah.
Are you actually going that way? Yeah.
We've already done that. Yeah, we've already done 6 packs. We've got 3 in Dublin and 3 in Cork.
Oh, what do I?
It's a small, basically, it's an electric bike with a box in the back.
But there's a driver or a
oh,
person.
Oh, yeah. No, oh, sorry, you mean an owner's or autonomous jobby. No, I don't know. Well, actually, I would like them. I think the most of us with a lot of people in our world, right, would be very happy if we could find an autonomous, but I'm not sure I can get them to wear a uniform, smile, and be happy at the doorstep at the same time.
Well, yeah, because, I can see so many issues there. Mm. But so going to what have you actually launched? Mm.
Yeah, look, we were first to launch the first electric depot in East Wall as an example, where we delivered the city centre postcodes in electric, and we're now at the moment moving this in the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've got ourselves over 50 electric vehicles, and we're now moving around the country, and we're going to put another 100 electric vehicles across the piece. Now, we can't put electric everywhere because we have routes that are 100 kilometres or 150 kilometres, and they just don't have the capacity in the battery. But what we're doing is we are now fitting routes to, and where it fits to electric, we're going to try and ensure that that's an electric vehicle that goes out on the road then.
What clever softwares do you use that I remember reading or learning about? Was it UPS? A UPS doesn't randomly go up a road. Yeah. inch is marked out to be the most efficient, and they don't, is it, they don't take right-hand turns or something.
And they have that. So this is called route optimization. So effectively, we can take one of our depots, 3,000 or 4,000 parcels, and effectively put it into a model, and that model will tell us the most efficient way to deliver those 3,000 or 4,000 parcels. And then when the driver is enabled to get into the van, then it gives them turn-by-turn navigation to tell them where to go and how to get there. So, and that's, well, it's certainly been in DVD UK for an awful long time because they had postcodes, but the challenge for us was until air codes came in, it wasn't possible here. And we are still critiquing that and getting that right. We haven't got it right yet, but we're not too far away from having that right.
When the postcodes, you'll remember this, there was a big hoo-ha about introducing postcodes.
Yeah.
And were you for them or against them?
Amazingly for them, yeah. I mean, it's just like...
Did they work?
Well, they didn't work because nobody ignored it. It was a typical Irish approach to it, right? We'll all do air codes and then we'll ignore it. And
there has been a sea change, though,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. What's your air code?
Yeah, well, I can give it to you. D04F8Y9.
Yeah. Now, if I'd asked that question a year ago or 2 years ago, right, you would have been struggling to give me that answer. Yeah. And it's the same.
I mean, if you were coming to my house, I'd just send you the air code.
Air code now, yeah. But it's now become habit, which it wasn't a habit at the beginning.
Oh, absolutely not.
And everybody seemed to fight against it for so long.
Then they found out that they wanted that jumper.
Yeah, then they found out they didn't have to take the phone call. Where are you?
Right. So... the adoption is huge.
No, it's not as big as we would like it to be. Yeah, so we would see probably about 60% of our parcels have an air code. 40% still don't have an air code.
I don't get that.
Yeah, that's true.
Weird.
Yeah.
We are odd people.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
we're actually hitting ourselves in the head.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've a bit of learning still to do on air codes.
Where will you be in 5 years, John?
Retired.
Will you?
Yes, I will be. Yeah, I think so. Although my team is in. So it was interesting when I first started as the CEO, I actually told my team that I was going to retire when the business exceeded 175 million. And that was a great incentive for the sales team to get up to 175 million. And then they got rid of them. But we've now exceeded 175 million and I'm still here. So I now have to reset that goal for the team. See where they go.
And not at the personal level, what do you think we might see in terms of the delivery business in the next 3 or 5?
Well, I think you'll see more of the same, to be truthful. I don't think there's no great sea change coming that's going to make a sizable difference to the delivery networks as they are. I think that the networks, as density comes and volume comes and density comes, then it allows you to get a lot smarter with it. So I think that our technology will improve. I think our customer experience will improve. If I take my own business, I'm absolutely manic about brand and cleanliness and all that sort of stuff, because to me, that's what you want when you're somebody coming up the path. You don't want them in an old dirty jacket and a high-vis jacket and a pair of jeans walking up to deliver your parcel, because it just doesn't project the right image to me. So, and when I'm talking to my customers, I'm effectively saying to them, I am your representative. If you're a website in Ireland or in the UK or anywhere else, the only thing your customer sees is your website, your product, and the final mile delivery driver. That's all they see. That's the experience. So if any one part of them lets you down, then effectively, then it makes a difference to whether they'll come back to that website and buy from it again.
Makes sense to me. You know, the final question that we ask is, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. My person I'd hire in a heartbeat is Barack Obama.
Any particular reason? I mean, there's reasons that
I'd get publicity for it, but the reason I would hire Barack Obama is I actually saw Barack Obama in Washington before he was even, he was just going for the American presidency, and I thought he was a wonderful man and a phenomenal speaker and a fabulous motivator. And I was saying to myself, if I was wanting somebody in my team, right, that I knew I could rely on, I'd say you could rely on Barack Obama no matter what scenario you found yourself in. And I've watched his career grow, I've watched all the different things that happened to him throughout his career and everything else, and I think that he's performed and been the person that he is. I would love to have him right next to me if I was in a battle.
It's not a bad choice. We normally do try to connect with people who have been nominated for Hire in a Heartbeat. Don't think he's going to respond, though.
Do you know?
No.
I could give him a call for you.
please.
Okay.
Yeah. There's Travers, CEO of DPD. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
I'm sure many of you would love to own your own distillery. Well, we can't make that happen, but we can tell you how you could own 5% of one. County Louth-based Listoke Distillery is offering one lucky winner 5% of the company's shares by way of a raffle, with tickets costing just £20 sterling each. This is founder Brona Conlon's clever way of raising funds to fuel the further expansion of her brands to bring them to the Russian and Chinese markets. But this isn't Brona's first venture. Wait till you hear this for a story. Brona Conlon, you are most welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conlon. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are a nurse, a midwife.
Yep.
But you're the most unusual midwife that I have met, not that I meet many, because you are truly an entrepreneur. Tell us about some of the businesses that you've been involved in.
I suppose, but I'm just thinking there, it's nice to have had the experience of both industries as such. Really good at present, because yesterday was World Nurses Day, so I was able to celebrate, and today is World Cocktail Day, so I can go again. But I suppose,
wonder, who makes up these days?
I don't know.
World Cocktail Day.
I know, but when you see them coming up, you have to follow them, you know. But I suppose, really, I always loved the food industry. I always loved food. And when I was 18 and did my A-levels up in Armagh, I took a 50 pence coin and flipped it, because I was accepted into nursing at the same time as accepted into catering. Nursing one, so I nursed for 10 years. But I suppose deep down I always wanted to do something else, and I always wanted to go into the food industry. So when I was working in Beaumont Hospital then in Dublin, when it moved down there, I went part-time and set up my first business at that stage.
Which was
a business called The Real Irish Food Company. We started off in the Spade Enterprise Centre down in Dublin 7, and eventually moved out to Balbriggan and then out to Drogheda, where the factory was eventually.
And why were you moving? Because it was getting bigger.
It was getting bigger, and yes, and I was travelling a lot, and I had two babies at the time and a third one on the way. So I kind of needed to be closer to where the childminder, if she needed me, I'd be there.
And how big was bigger?
Well, where we ended up with Real Irish Food Company, it was quite a significant company. We were supplying into Tesco's, Dunnes, Super Value, the whole lot of them. We produced jams, marmalades and pasta sauces and dressings and things. It was exciting, it was fun, and it was very, very different. And I suppose for me, it instilled a lesson into the kids, because they had to come to work with me many a time and make up boxes or put lids on jars or do whatever needed to be done from they were a very young age. But then I suppose then by the time I was ready to sell it, so we sold it in 2005 to Jacob Fruitfield. And it was more a case of we weren't able to fill capacity ourselves. Because we had a beautiful new factory that was purpose built. So with Jacob's coming on board then, that was able to fill our capacity. So it was lovely for me, because it took the pressure off me of having to be the owner and to worry about everybody's wages. And in fact, I actually was getting paid all the time. So yeah, it was a win-win situation.
At the top of the business, how many people were you employing?
We would have had 10, 3 part-time and 7 full-time.
Okay. And then you sell on... And you take the pressure off yourself. Then what happens? Because this is a further twist to your story.
Yes, another twist. So we sold 2005, and in September 2006, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So,
and not any ordinary type of breast cancer.
No, we're one of those families that have the I could say unfortunate, but maybe we're fortunate because we know we have it. But we have the BRCA1 gene. And I'm one of 5 girls. And when I was diagnosed in 2006, I got the BRCA test done. So all my sisters ended up also all positive. So,
and for those who don't know, that is what we would know as the Angelina Jolie cancer, if you want to call that.
Breast cancer gene,
It is very, very aggressive.
Very aggressive. I was very lucky. We have a fantastic GP in Drogheda. And I was in Vincent's and got treated very quickly. And that's why I'm sitting here now telling you the story. So every day I'm grateful for that. You know, I've well recovered. I've got over what we needed to do. And, you know, gone back to myself.
And if it had happened, or if you had come across it 6 months earlier, or 8 months, 10, 12 months earlier, what would have happened?
Oh, no business. Well, if it had happened before the business was sold, that was it. There wouldn't, yeah. It physically couldn't have happened. And what's really more concerning probably is I probably would have put the business before the illness, because I wouldn't have allowed myself to be sick. So, things just happened I was just very fortunate.
So we move on, because then you become a consultant in the food industry, because you know a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what were you doing?
So I was working with an awful lot of companies. So I worked through the local Leos. So I would have been in Monaghan, Cavan, Tipperary.
We're big fans of the Leos.
Oh, they're brilliant. Yeah. They are the number one people. They're fantastic for any small business setting up, and even established businesses, you know, that just need a little bit of support. They're fantastic. I work with Louth Leo now all the time. I'm also part of the Boyne Valley, which is, you know, so I'm very closely linked with Meath Leo. But when I was working as a consultant, the vast majority of my work would have been through the Leos, and it would have been helping small businesses, always in the food, primarily the food industry at that stage. And it would have been helping them to get set up, or see, you know, source materials, or assess whether they should even set up sometimes, you know. Not that I would have made any decisions, but I certainly would have had a good idea from my past experience of what works and what really doesn't work.
And a poutine, you were involved with a poutine.
Yeah. So, our first poutine brand that we had was a brand called Kamara, and we were the first company ever to transport five pallets of legal poutine around the country. So it went into Tesco's. And that was sort of the early, 2011, 2012.
And what brought you to poutine?
Where I had reached a stage where I was working with different companies, and I saw that there was going to be, that, you know, I just suppose I kind of fell into the drinks industry to a large degree. Poutine came across me just as in conversation with a friend at one stage, and then they took that company on, and then I got involved then obviously with...
Hang on a second now, you had a conversation. I love these conversations. You weren't just sitting there having a cup of tea and you said, let's talk about poutine. You know, there must have been a little detour, or you went down an avenue to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember now, but I would guess at the time it was more a case of, okay, I need to do something else again. You know, the consultancy was working, but I wanted just to do that little bit more for myself again. And that's whenever I went to look at that poutine project. As I say, then I got involved in another poutine project in North County Dublin, and worked with it for 18 months, nearly 2 years. Now, in the end, that didn't come to fruition, and I was terribly disappointed. But you know, that's life. So it sort of knocked me back a bit.
And has anybody actually produced poutine so far?
Yeah. Oh, no, there are poutines being produced, but we were going to produce the first potato poutine.
And has anybody made that yet?
The equipment has been sent. West Cork Distillers have bought the equipment to make potato poutine.
Oh, sorry, so they may be doing so.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, I presume that they're going to use that kit for it, because it'd be an awful shame not to. I mean, it was class kit, you know, so it'd be a shame not to use it.
So you learnt an awful lot about the drinks industry.
Very fast, because I suppose even then there were very, very few women in the drinks industry. Like, there's loads now in comparison to 2011. And it's only 10 years ago. It is 10 years ago, though, which is even worse. But anyway, moving on. But I suppose, look, from my perspective, it was a case that whenever we were working in the industry, it was given me especially now an outlay into areas that I hadn't worked in before. I mean, the likes of Bord Bia, I've always been part of Bord Bia, but now I was part of the drinks end of it, not just the food end of it. And, you know, yes, the two businesses are very, very similar. You know, you're doing the same thing. You're still producing a product. You're still going through legals, and you're still trying to sell it and get it out there and get it, you know, get resales and all that. So there's no big, big difference other than the fact that, I suppose for me, the big difference was when the kids were small, it was jam. When they got big, it was gin. And I was the best mummy. So let me add.
I hadn't thought about that one. So where is Listoke now? As in, you set it up how long ago?
So Listoke then was set up following the closure of the Potchin distillery. And I think at that stage, you know, I just said, this is the last time I'm ever going to try and do something myself. So anyway, we went into Listowel. We were in Listowel House. We set it up in 2016. And then we were the first gin school in Ireland. So it was huge. I mean, we got a brilliant response from it. It is a brilliant experience. If anybody hasn't been to the gin school, it's worth going to. You make your own bottle of gin. We've about 50 botanicals to choose from, and you actually distill it off in a little pot and everything.
It's currently closed, but we are reopening.
And hopefully the end of June.
It sounds like a magnificent way to entertain yourself or your staff or a bonding or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can take, is it up to 60 people?
Up to 20 to make the gin, to do the gin experience. So we can do tastings, and we would take up to about 35 for that. It's just a lovely experience, and you know, people can come in, and by the time they're leaving, they've had some beautiful Listowel gin and tonics, so they're ready to chatter, and everybody leaves as friends, and it's a lovely experience.
It was also on your website, and you're very careful to make sure that nobody drives there back. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that's partly to help us as well, because it means that if they come on a bus, we have to put them back on the bus and then they leave. They don't sit around until 11 o'clock at night, and we're sort of going, we need to go home. So
that's only one section of your business, which is the gin school. Now, back to the brand, Listowel.
Listowel. So the next, where the brand came from is Listowel is a townland, right, in just north of Drogheda. The first year it was ever put down on a map was in 1777. So we use Listowel 1777 for our core gin. Our branding other than that is Listowel with the owl. So our owl, as you maybe have seen in the photographs, is very colourful. And basically what it is, it's an owl with all the botanicals that we have in our core gin. So you can see the juniper berries in it, and you can see the different roots and things like that. So it's exciting. So we moved from the Stoke House out to Europe. So we're actually in a business park now, but we've built a gin house in the business park, and that's where the gin school is now. So it's really beautiful. And then of course we had the lovely COVID heading towards us. And really what happened with COVID was that literally, I'll never forget it. It was on the Thursday, the 12th, we had food writers visiting the region. As I said, I'm part of Boyne Valley Flavours, so I'm chairperson of them. So I'd be involved in a lot of food and drinks activities going on in the region. So we had the food writers all coming out, and I just thought we need to be careful here, because we knew something was going to happen with COVID, but we didn't know what it was.
No, nobody did.
I know, and isn't hindsight a great thing? So the Thursday we got in, and I ran into Tesco and got some wee pumps, and we just made some sanitizer ourselves, just so that the people getting on and off the bus on the tour would be safe at least. And the next day we seen how bad things were going to go, and contacted the revenue, and straight away whatever's going to need to be done. And I thought this was one of the silliest mistakes I was ever going to make, you know, because I'd spent our few bob that we had to go and buy plastic bottles to make sanitizer. And I'm going, oh, I'll be looking at these in a year. Well, I wasn't looking at them at the end of the Sunday, to be honest. It was heartrending to see the people and the queues and the fear.
Oh, yeah.
And the anxiety. And then the pure relief on their face when they got sanitizer. And it was nothing, only they were only taking it to go home to sit inside for the next 3 months anyway. But it was more, okay, I've got that little bit of security. And it was at the time when you sanitise the door of the car and the shopping coming in, and, you know, and it meant so much to so many people. And there was obviously a massive shortage.
And that kept you ticking over.
It saved our business. It absolutely did, without a doubt. I mean, there was a call to arms. We said, we can't do this for everybody. A lot of other distilleries came on board with this, including Jameson. And, you know, it was something that we could do. I mean, we'd get phone calls on a Sunday morning that the local hospital has run out of sanitizer, and you just go to and pick up stuff and drop it up. Like, it was just, we could do it, so we did do it.
Because you had the alcohol sitting there, is that it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So with ours, so there's a World Health Organization standard for producing sanitizer. So I'd got that straight away. Now on that, it does say that you need to use hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide in itself is a pretty naff product. Like, it's really, it has its place, but it's really, really strong. But for something like a sanitizer that's been bottled at 70% alcohol, you don't, you know, if you're a third world country, you'd need hydrogen peroxide, but certainly not with us. So we were able to get our license, not use it, but what we do use is we use the spirit And we distill it off similar to how we would distill off the gin. So we're using natural botanicals, but we would add extra botanicals so that it'd be the oil from the botanicals then would actually get onto your hands. So what we found was people were saying two things. One was funny and one wasn't. One was that the kids with eczema could use it and they're still using it. I mean, we dropped supplies into Dublin about 4 or 5 different schools on the way in here. And the other thing was the number of people that came and said that the arthritis had cleared from their hands using sanitizer. But if you think back to putching in the olden days, when they used to put it on horses' legs or on people's knees and things like that.
That's very
interesting. So I thought, it was very good.
I love this podcast because I learn things.
So much.
So back to your gin and the Stoke and all. It's not an easy business. There is one, as we now know, as I know you and I discussed, there is a gin joint on every street corner. Yeah. It's you opened up a Pandora's box of for gin making.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, to a large degree, absolutely. I mean, everybody's making gin. Every town is a gin nearly at this stage. And some of them are absolutely fabulous gins. I suppose with us, we are a gin distillery and we are a gin school. So that's what we produce. And I think we're the only gin in the country that actually exclusively does produce those. Now, we do have a whiskey. And we brought on our whiskey because we needed to complement the gin from an export point of view. And so we've sourced it from just up the road from the Great Northern Distillery.
Yeah, John Teeling was on with us here a few episodes ago. Incredible operator.
Absolute pet. And so we've outsourced that, and we've no problem saying that. You know, we're not making whiskey. We're not going to. We don't have that sort of wherewithal, but we don't need to. We are maturing it, so we will have our casks in on site and mature it and that as well. But from a gin point of view, really what we did was we went outside the box as usual and we bought in what's called an ice still. So an ice still piece of equipment is a still that, for all intent and purposes, is like an iPhone version of a dial-up phone. So it's very, very modern technology. And you just press the buttons, put in your program and it makes your gin.
Wow.
So in theory, we could be in the Bahamas making it, but then somebody would have to fill the still and empty it. So it hasn't worked yet.
Having made your gin, you then have to sell it.
Yeah.
And starting, we've had Mary Sadler of Cool Swan on, for example, here.
Lovely.
And what you learn about the difficulties of trying to sell, you think, first of all, that the multiples are just going to open up their space for you. Mm-hmm. That ain't going to happen. Yeah. And as sure your competitors are going to make sure that that ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It's very, very tough. And, you know, Conal, one of the things was that whenever Brexit was actually happening and before we got the year's reprieve, that previous year, which was 2019, we were inundated with cheap English gins. And some of the stores still have a lot of it. And we couldn't compete. We just couldn't compete because they've been mass produced in massive, massive distilleries. A lot of them aren't even like a distilled gin. A lot of them are what's called a compound gin. So it's basically flavoured vodka that you don't need any expertise for a start. But that aside, yeah, there has been those challenges. But then again, what we've done again is we've been very fortunate in that we've focused on what we can do best. We did win Best European Gin in 2018. We won 2 Gin Masters in 1 year and we're the only business ever to win 2 Masters in 1 year. And that was over 96% by 16 judges. So, you know, it's a lovely accolade for us to have. So we work to those strengths. We make a really unusual gin and we make it a really robust, tasty gin. And then what we were able to do then is to go and offer our services. So we do some private label and that helps the business along. We've been in Tesco, we're in Dunnes currently, we're in Super Value currently. Tesco's have delisted us, but again, there's a lot of English products there, an awful lot. And that's just where it's at.
What is it like to be delisted?
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, because you're sort of going, all these people that know that our gin is, because we've actually built up a really cool following especially through the gin school. So on a weekend, the gin school was run over nearly 3 years at this stage. And most weekends you could have 60 plus people in over the weekend. All those people are leaving as brand ambassadors.
Yeah.
If they walk into any shop or they walk into a bar and see the Stoke, they'll buy it. You know, and we were always able to say, oh, it's in Tesco's, it's in Tesco's, you know, as well now. But now, thankfully, it is in Dunnes and it is in Super Value, and it, some of the centres even have it in that. So, you know, it is starting to get out there a little bit better. But it is, no, it is. It, you sort of feel you failed whenever something like that happens and you make the phone call and, you know, you're not there in Tesco and you're sort of going, okay.
Angry. But you know what? I'd be angry.
I haven't the sense to be angry. Maybe I was just upset. I was really disappointed. I was disappointed. I think that's what it was.
Actually, there might be other words that you might use.
I'm not going to use that language here. Too many young children.
Question, let's get on to the raffle.
Yeah.
Because you want to raise money. It's a clever idea. Is that it's all, I presume you have all the approvals, because running a raffle isn't that straightforward. You have to get permissions and stuff, don't you?
Yeah. Well, we are not physically running the raffle ourselves. So effectively what we're doing is we are raffling or selling off 5% of our business for £20.
Yeah.
So somebody can get it for that. We have outsourced it, the entire process, to a company actually in the UK.
Called Raffall.
Yeah, yeah,
I went
exactly.
onto that website. Very interesting.
And yeah, and I mean, they do a lot of houses and cars and, of course, camper vans. There's two penny now being raffled. I still haven't won any of them, but anyway. but yeah, so I suppose, look, what happened was we, you know, after being knee-deep in sanitizer for so long, we just sort of said, right, let's just reignite this business. Let's just really get going again. And it is, it's myself and my husband and my two daughters that are running the business. And, you know, we just sort of went, right, time to dust down the COVID and start working again. So that's when we launched the whiskey. So the whiskey was only launched at the beginning of this year. And then we already were in Russia with our plane, our 1777 gin. So we now literally from yesterday have got that listed, are getting our pink gin listed to go there as well.
Well done you.
So delighted. We can start seeing things happening.
I'd have to go down a little rabbit hole there now to talk to you about Russia and how you get listed in Russia. But let's stick with the raffle for a second. You are trying to raise how much?
So we would, well, as much as we can, excuse me, but we would like to sell at least 10,000 tickets to make it worth our while. So that would be 200,000
pounds, because it's being run by a UK operation. That explains why it's sterling.
Yes.
Okay.
Now they'll have their percentage off it. And then we're also given a £10,000 second prize and a £5,000 third prize. So really with 10,000 tickets, we're sort of starting to get there. I would, you know, in my heart, I would have thought we'll sell 20,000 in a heartbeat. But you know what? It doesn't happen that easy.
But one of the issues is for people to know about it.
Yeah.
And this, we're hopefully going to help you with that.
Brilliant.
So is there any top end to it? In other words, like, you're not saying you're going to top out at maximum 50,000 tickets.
Yes. Well, we did have to put 50,000 on the application as such to Raffall, because you have to have a closing amount and you also have to have a closing date. So the closing date is the 9th of July, and if we've sold 2,000 or 50,000 tickets, the raffle will be held on the 9th of July.
And the winning raffle ticket, and I will be buying one, will get 5% of, it's called a C share, I think.
Yeah.
Is that not a regular share, is it?
Well, it's... What we're saying is it is a regular share in that you get the benefits of somebody that has a regular share. So you will get your benefits of things like your dividend. And certainly when we sell the business, when we sell, not saying when we might, it is when we will sell, then you get your 5% of that as well.
I also like the line that you use is that you don't have to do any work.
Yes, you don't have to do any work. No, we're not asking you to come to work every day or to sit on a board or anything like that. But you can be our top taster. So you can do tastings, you can make your own gin, you can attend the gin school, you know. So, look, it's for us, it's we love going to work. We have a brilliant business, we have a brilliant bit of fun every day, and we know that what we're doing, we're going the right direction with it. We know we're getting into China, we've got America set up, and really for somebody to come in and be part of that, it'll just be a hoot. It'll be great fun, they'll enjoy it. And they'll benefit at the end up financially. So in theory, if somebody said to me today, what's 5% worth? You'd probably say around €80,000. So, but
that's
we haven't
right.
done it that. Yeah, yeah, it is. It's a lot, but that's only the start. I mean, we haven't started China yet in America. So imagine what it's going to be worth in 5 years. So, and you know, it's for us, it's yes, it's the 5%, but it's, you're part of a distillery and you're part of the buzz that we have, you know, every day, and you're just coming out and going, yes, you know, this is great. And, you know, and if you win and you're living in America, and if you win and you're living in Italy, you can come and visit. And you have an excuse to come and visit. So, yeah, it's just something very different.
And when you raise the cash, doesn't matter how much, say 20,000, say 200,000, mm-hmm. what are you going to use that for?
Absolutely, all for brand activation. So we're heading into the Chinese market. So we had our...
How do you do that? I mean, you don't just pitch up and say, here.
I know, but believe me, you don't. Actually, I was in Beijing with the World Trade Center just in June 2019, and I was meant to be going back just literally in March 2020. But anyway, but what has happened now, we've actually got a local Chinese chap who is doing a lot of work with us, which is brilliant because he's obviously got language for both sides. And we just did a trade show there last weekend in Hainan, and the Irish ambassador to China was there as well. And it was brilliant because we were there with about, I'd say, 10 other companies, including Cool Swan, actually.
I saw Cool Swan posted a video of that. That's right. She sent it over to me, yeah.
And we did too, but I obviously didn't see it. But anyway.
No, you didn't. She actually sent it to me.
She said, okay,
you
didn't. My bad. I'll send the next one, don't worry. And they were there. Mary was there. And it's brilliant because that was focusing specifically on, you know, getting that launch pad into China. The hardest thing currently with China is actually to get samples in. So this way, whenever we partake in the show, we were able to send all our samples and we have them there now, and we oversent so that now when we need to send samples to companies, then we have them there already to get and send out.
And what is the hassle or what's the problem of trying to get samples in?
It's all to do with the not taking in because of packaging and COVID, and there's loads of... it's just a song and dance at present.
Well, believe me, Mary Sadler has gone through this with me about the States is another minefield. But anyway,
yes.
We'll
end.
So back to the Chinese and Ireland and gin. Do they recognise an Irish gin for being an Irish gin, or do they care? Or
Well, they don't really recognise, to a degree, they don't recognise Ireland. Some of them do and some of them don't. Some of them just think that we're just part of Europe. Now, I haven't said, because when I was in Beijing, as I was saying, like, I thought a lot of them didn't even know what gin was. You're right, they didn't know. And then they thought it was the same as, I can't think of the name of it now, but they're
Saki.
Local. The other one. Bijou, that they drink all the time.
Yeah.
Right, so they would take it for breakfast. Well, they used to take it for breakfast. But then they were taking our gin straight and they were going, no, I don't know about this. Which is fair enough, because if I drank gin straight, I would not be very happy. But anyway, so they're starting to learn now, and they're actually very much coming into the European culture. They're very much coming into the cocktail culture, and that's where something like our gin will really hold up, because it's a 43% gin and it's strong for cocktails. And I've had it out there, and I have seen, you know, people taking it and going, wow, that's different. I suppose the other benefit that we have is that we've got the 1777, and we've also got the Cacao and Raspberry, which is the pink gin, and now we've also got our whiskey, our Wise Isle whiskey. So having that portfolio of three products has actually helped us a lot, you know, with getting our importer in China.
Well, what makes up your mind as to which market that you can concentrate on? Because you are a very small company and it's a very big world out there. So where do you start, or why would you start, say, with China? I know there are many people there, but why there?
Well, China actually kind of happened with me again a year and 2 years ago with through the World Trade Center in Dublin, and that has kind of carried on. And now this is where we are 2 years later. We're ready just to go and literally, you know, sort of start signing up contracts. It's funny because there are loads of markets. Russia we were already in. We got that through Board Bia. It was a trade show, and it was and they're really cool to work with because they just order, pick up, and on they go, and it's brilliant. But then again, you know, you could look at the South African markets opening up, the European market. We've done some in, but we haven't done an awful lot in. And there's loads of markets. And whiter than it is, but just trying to figure out what you could do and where you can go next. So I think really for us, the decision was, right, we now know what this market's about because we did all the research on it. We now know how we can get into it. And we now have a route to market. So let's work on that and to see where it takes us to. With the US market, we already had a distributor out there, but we just changed them. We just changed distributor there at the beginning of this year. And now we're just ready to go full swing with them now as well. And they're taking the two gins and the whiskey as well. So it's focusing and knowing to focus, I think. You know?
And all of that means working capital as well, because you have to produce this stuff to be able to sell it.
Yeah. So working capital is one thing, But for us, the bigger thing is that if you look at the big companies that are launching in these regions, I mean, they have millions behind them to pump into brand promotion. So our take on it is, okay, we're either going to go in reverse gear with not a cent, or we can go in about second gear and get some funding behind us. And that's why we decided on the raffle. It's just to give us that little bit of extra push so that when we, you know, when we need to do a promotion or when we need to print something off or run t-shirts, that we can do it and not think twice about it, you know, and just really drive the business. It's very exciting actually for us to be able to think that that can happen, you know, because, you know, being a small business, you count every cent every day and, you know exactly where you're at with it.
And then be careful what you wish for, because we had Aidan Meegan of Natted Jack Whiskey on the podcast, and he's actually relocating to the USA because he feels that's the only way to do it. So you may have to relocate to somewhere nice like Connecticut.
Well, do you know what? Yeah, I wouldn't mind actually relocating somewhere where there's going to be a bit of sunshine. But we can travel, and Sarah's doing sales for us, and she's young. I mean, I've done a lot of traveling, I suppose, over the years, especially in the last 2 to 3 years, except for 2020. But Sarah's well able. She'll go off out and do it, and we will work closely with our distributors.
We are going to have to wrap up, but yeah, before we do, I have to ask you, who would you hire in a heartbeat for that great little business of yours?
John Teeling. And you mentioned him earlier.
Get away. He's going to love that.
Oh, I would have John Teeling in tomorrow morning, and he drives past my door every day. He goes to Dundalk. So we met John, myself and John. My husband met John quite a number of times at different events and things like that. And Stephen and Jack as well. But John he's an absolute gentleman, as you know.
I do him very well. He is a lovely guy.
And he's just such a mindful of knowledge. And especially when it comes to industry, not only the drinks industry, but especially the drinks industry. And I think really where I am now with Stoke, you know, just to be able to get that little bit extra push, it would have to be John.
Well, I will pass that on to him.
And give him my number and see what he'd like to call.
I actually emailed him yesterday telling him about a new thing that's hit the market. They're putting sparklers into everything. There's going to be a sparkling whiskey. Sounds awful, doesn't
it? Oh no, don't do that.
There you go now.
Oh, it would need to be sweet, and that would be terrible.
And he then comes straight back to me and tells me that the company, I think it's an American company called, if I remember correctly, Nonda or something like that. And he says, oh, we know the chairman very well. He knows everybody.
He does.
That so is John Teeling.
If he's driving up the Dundalk Road, he knows where we are.
Well, I shall, as I say, I shall pass on both your good wishes, and I'll also say,
absolutely,
if he needs a job, that there's one up in County Louth for him.
Well, actually, we're using his whisky, so he can just tell him well. That he knows.
That is Brona Conlon, and she is of the Listoke Distillery. And if anybody wants to buy a ticket, absolutely, you go to this thing called Raffle, FAWL, is it?
But the easiest thing to do, actually, Conal, is to go onto our website. So go onto listokedistillery.ie and it'll bring you straight to our tickets.
Okay.
It's a process like everything else. You have to put in your name and an email address and that. But that's just so that you can be emailed when you win. So
and
it's always good.
And it's a 1 in 16,000 chance or something. Better than the lotto.
Oh, much better than the lotto, but much better odds for far longer.
And
you get
you're
gin.
Backing a business.
Yes.
A great Irish business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brona, a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very
on That
much.
Great Business Show.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
And that's it from That Great Business Show. This is our 34th episode. On bass and treble today was ace soundman Keith Starrs. Peter Rice will top and tail us later. And my thanks to all the team here at Dublin South FM Podcast Studios. Valerie O'Reilly of Unicorn PR suggested Des Travers to me. And Rani Dabrai, one-time Miss Moneypenny, sent Brona Conlon our way. She said she was going to be great, and she was right. With us to you both. If you know of any great company that should be featured on Ireland's Best Business Podcast, do send producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com an email, and we'll take it from there. And that's the same email address if you would like to advertise to Ireland's SMEs. Like you, we're open for business and would love to have a chat. Please, please also do tell your friends about That Great Business Show. You wouldn't want them to miss out now, would you? Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for a week and you will be, like me, a convert forever. So for me, Conal O'Moran, from That Great Business Show, episode 34, thank you for listening. We'll talk again next week. Slán tá mo.